This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 314. Will the Death Star get big round ears? Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to yet another new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hey ho, everybody.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Did you have a good week?
Yeah.
Was it full of nerdiness?
Oh my god, yes. Have you been reading my nerd journal?
I kind of...
Did I leave it open again?
No, I hacked it.
You hacked it? It's a book. You just open it.
Wait. Then who's like, did I read?
Wasn't mine. Because
I picked a lock.
Mine's just a regular book. You can just open it. Like, blam! It's open.
I wonder whose nerd journal it was.
Not mine.
It's a good read, though. I'll share it with you.
Okay.
I, myself, have had a pretty good week. It's pretty nerdy. So we are just gonna, I guess, kind of jump into it because we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. At least I do. I have no idea what you're talking about because I didn't get your notes before the show or heads up on like what you were going to... Sometimes you'll send me a text message and be like, I'm talking about this on the show. And I'm like, oh, cool. I didn't get one of those.
So. Nope, not this time.
So I don't know what you're
talking about. I know, it's a surprise.
That's dangerous.
I love supplies.
Who doesn't love supplies?
Post-it notes for the win.
So the first thing I want to talk about actually is an anime that I started watching on Crunchyroll. And, you know, I tend to enjoy very serious series or really funny, light series. I'm one extreme or the other. I really don't sit well with the middle ground ones.
Okay.
You know, Elfin Lied, I loved. Fafnir, not so much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was playing Anime Roulette with Crunchyroll.
Oh, God, that could be really dangerous.
It can be very dangerous where I don't pay attention to what I'm looking at. I just kind of start pressing buttons, and when I finally end up hitting an episode that starts to play, that's what I end up watching. So I started my roulette routine. And a video came on, and I had it streaming through my Apple TV, so it was on my main TV. So I wasn't I didn't look at what the title of the series was or anything like that. And it was set in a high school, surprise, surprise. And it was it seemed to be a slice of life series because we were, as the user, as the audience member,
user
watching a girl enter what appeared to be a school club.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the astronomy club. Well, it was the struggling astronomy club, as the sign over the door said, which was in the basement, which was kind of weird. It was a big iron door. And so I'm settling in for what I assume is going to be a slice of life anime. And I was very wrong. I was very...
What happened?
Very wrong. The doors open, and there was a character with pigtails, black pigtails, who was basically torturing another club member who was redheaded, who is a fan of hentai and yaoi. And... she's, like, bondage roping her and then going through her booklets that she had in her bag, and she was kind of crying about it, but the way that the camera angle was, it was just a complete fan service bondage shot, and we learned that the girl walking into the club is the president of the club that has four members, well, five. And at this point, I'm like, huh. Well, this is not your average slice of life.
Yes.
Let's see if we can figure out what's going on. And so I waited 20 minutes for rhyme or reason to show up in this episode.
And?
It didn't.
What about episode two?
No. So, you know how Excel Saga just has no rhyme or reason and it jumps all over the place?
Well, that's not necessarily true.
Rhyme or reason in Excel Saga?
You get the reason and they weave it in such a weird way that it doesn't look like rhyme or reason. But at the very end, you start getting that, oh God, there's more going on to this. At the beginning of that series, I think the first half of Excel Saga was very vignette. We're just going to fuck around with the concept of we could change whatever the show's going to be about.
Yep.
But the core of what was going on in the show still remained
and what constant. And what was the core? Because I didn't figure out other than chaos.
Well, yeah, but
chaos, by definition, has no rhyme or reason.
Otherwise, within itself, it has its own rhyme or reason. Just because it's not a rhyme or reason that you prescribe to does not necessarily mean that it's lacking.
No. The dictionary definition of chaos is that lacking order, reason.
I didn't say anything about it having order. Did I?
All I'm saying is, if you say that your definition is chaos, your rhyme and your reason is chaos.
Yeah, and there's your rhyme and reason.
But that is not rhyme and reason, because chaos by definition
But you could be
no
grounded in that as a foundation, which is what that show was about. Not to mention, it was meant to be an entire exaggeration and satire on anime itself. So it was like a dark comedy about anime genres.
Okay, I'll go with you with it being a satire on anime, because Excel Saga absolutely was. But as far as rhyme or reason from episode to episode, plot, storyline, which is what I'm talking about.
The overall plot was that Lord Il Palazzo wanted to take over that one city.
Yes.
And at the very end, he realized that he couldn't even do that, let alone take over the world. So he was ultimately going to fail.
Right. I'll give you that. Okay, but as far as there being a storyline, just having a goal does not make a plot. Okay, having a objective does not make a plot. Plot, beginning, middle, end. That's how you tell a story. Goal, objective, not so much story.
So be it, but continue on what you were talking about.
This is just my opinion. I'm not trying to change your opinion.
You wouldn't.
Okay, I'm just sharing my opinion, having watched the Cell Saga now three times, trying to just wrap my brain around it. Doesn't happen for me.
You're not supposed to.
And if I can't wrap my brain around something,
you're thinking too hard.
That's what I do.
Well,
I think soft. No, can't think soft. Think hard.
No.
Think hard. Think hard.
Think hard. Think soft. Think hard.
No, no.
Think soft.
No. Think hard. I'm going to put it on a bracelet.
Think soft.
So the series that I started watching very much reminded me of Excel Saga in that there's just chaos in the whole series. And I've only watched four episodes of it. And it definitely pokes fun at itself. I mean, I got into episode two where the entrance scenario is never the same. And neither is the exit song. It's always different, based off of whatever theme they're going with or poking fun with, fun of in the anime world.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because I thought we saw that in Ino X Boku, where the ending and opening songs
didn't
were.
Didn't say that there was anything wrong with that. I'm just sharing how it works.
This is how it does it.
Okay, and as soon as I got into episode two, I was like, oh my God, I gotta tell Panda about this, because this is right up her alley, and she's gonna love it. The series is called EB10.
EB10.
Okay. And in the second episode, they are basically poking fun at group anime series, you know, special guy, special girl groups, so much so that they do a Sailor Moon parody. And first of all, the parody starts with them not even, like, just trying to do a parody of the magical girl change. they take the actual Sailor Moon transformation video and just pixelate it, like 8-bit it out, and run it. So they don't even try to draw their own. And they just pixelate it so that they don't violate any laws. And when the Supergirl transformation finishes, the character who is the pervert, as I like to call her, has transformed into Taylor Moon.
Taylor Moon.
Yes. And then proceeds to transform the other members of
That's not how the transformations work.
By naming them, and then they transform into the outfits. I mean, she has even, like, the Serena meatballs and all that.
Odangos.
And they don't, they called. She doesn't have a tuxedo mask. She has a tuxedo mask. Rosa Rose. It's just, it is so funny.
You can't copyright Rose throwing.
It's like, and it's the first time that you see a dude in the anime series when this happens, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly who she was trying to fight, because she had, like, you know, Sailor Marketing and, Taylor Marketing.
Taylor
Counting. Like, it's just so bizarre and off the wall.
I love it already.
And then at one point, she has a younger sister. We're introduced to her. She's first year in another school, but she's trying to find someone at her sister's school, and they somehow became estranged. You have no idea how it happened. And then they show a flashback that has nothing to do with it.
Of course.
Then there's a cat who, because every student group has to have a teacher advisor.
And their advisor is a cat.
It ends up being the cat because their teacher, Omori Sensei, who is a young teacher, so she's just infatuated with her boyfriend all the time. Like, she'll leave class early because she wants to go and make something for her boyfriend. And so she'll be like, I'm not Omori Sensei. This is Omori Sensei. And she holds up the cat.
Right.
And throws it at the kids. And then she's like, I'm just Itsuki, blah, blah, blah. And goes running off to do stuff with her boyfriend. Unless she's depressed because her most current boyfriend has dumped her. At which point she gets, you know, the purpley depression lines and goes hide in a corner and they can't deal with her anyway. So then the cat ends up being their advisor and sometimes will instruct them on things to
do. Does the cat speak?
Only one time. The cat totally pulled a Kevin Smith. Like, most of the time the cat's all meow, meowing, meow, meowing. But during the Taylor Moon thing, it spoke.
Oh, God. What color is the cat?
It's Tabby.
Of course, because they can't do a black or a white cat.
Correct. So it's a tabby cat.
Artemis and Luna.
And so the cat also tends to
rape people.
Well, no, just eats out this one girl in the group.
Eats out.
Yeah, it goes up the skirt, and then she's like, "Oh, Mori Sensei, you can't." And then, you know,
bestiality. Whoo, bestiality.
And then Drew always gets caught, and the girl's like, oh, I didn't know you were into that. Well, now I'm never going to let you touch Omori Sensei again. And then she's like drooling and reaching out. And she's like, Omori Sensei. No, you can't have it, you dirty, dirty pedophile. You
dirty, dirty cat whore.
And she also reads tarot cards. And so you got a pervert, and then you've got this genius who's kind of gone off the deep end. You have the older sister type, who is the president of the club, who is always fighting with the student council president to keep the club open because they're always threatening to close it.
Do they ever do anything with astronomy and stars?
At, like, the end of each episode, there's a moment where they're all grouped together to look at the stars and they talk about constellations or things, and then that's, like, the end of it. So that's the only thread that's, like, consistent through all of them, is that at the end of the episode, you are going to see stars, and there's going to be a 15 to 20 second acknowledgement about the astral plane in some shape or form.
Holy crap,
and
man.
Then it ends. So it's just chaos from beginning to end, from episode to episode. I've only seen 5 episodes, but it is on Crunchyroll, so I highly recommend, if you are in the mood for something that is just as chaotic and over the top as Excel Saga, that's not Excel Saga. You gotta try EB10.
I might have to try this show.
Seriously, you need to watch it.
I just might have to.
I feel like it would be so up your alley. Like, your alley, it's up it. So that's my first thing. What do you have?
Well, I have been playing a lot of tabletop games fairly recently.
Oh, Jesus.
Yep, so I'm going right back into tabletop land. And I want to...
That's where you have cards and stuff and you get people together IRL.
Yeah.
That means in real life.
Yeah, that's what I do. I hang out with people in real life and not in front of my screen all the time. And
sometimes
I've begun to realize I have this really odd trend about when I start playing tabletop games. Mm. Like, I've been watching a lot of...
Oh, I've definitely noticed this particular pattern.
Not even going to that particular element, but I've been watching a lot of Geek and Sundry.
Mm.
And I've been watching a lot of Tabletop with Will Wheaton.
Mm. And Geek and Sundry, Tabletop Will Wheaton.
Yeah. And it's weird because I notice that whenever I watch, like, I don't watch them all, like, in rapid succession, but I'll watch one that I think is kind of interesting, and then somehow, somewhere, someone's like, hey, I have this game, I should have friends over to play it, and I always end up being one of those friends. So mm-hmm. I end up playing whatever it is that Will Wheaton has recently released as that's what he's
really,
playing.
That's not really a bad
no.
regress in life.
No, it's not.
I can't say that I can fault your argument as being invalid, because I can't.
No. So, the game I really kind of want to talk about is one that really kind of made my head hurt.
Uh-oh.
And not in a
did
bad...
Did it give your brain an owie?
It did. So, and this game was made by two NASA scientists.
Well, so, that, I mean, that should tell you right then and there. That
it's a... It's
hurt
a
your head.
It's a heavy...
I mean, it might have been rocket science.
Well, I mean, NASA, so space...
Yes,
space
that was the joke.
That
I
was the ha-ha
to
part.
Make a
and,
but you didn't fall for
no,
my ha-ha.
No, I didn't. But
guess your brain
and the game
really
seems
hurting.
Really interesting, and I was like, you know what? I will give this game a try because you don't have to think to play this game, but you do have to think to play this game. And the game,
my head hurts
already
with what
and
you just said.
The game is called Flux. Flux is
flux,
a
like the flux capacitor.
Kind of, sort of, maybe. Let me break it down a little bit. I think
break it down.
I believe you can have up to 5 players. It's a card game, and each player gets dealt 3 cards, and one card is laid face out for everybody to see, and it shows basic rules, which is you draw a card and you play one card.
Okay.
Now here's where the flux part comes in. The rules and the goal are constantly in flux, so I pick up a card and it gives me a whole new set of rules. And it will say new rules. Now you draw 2, play 2. Or you draw 4 cards and play 3 cards. So, and you're constantly just putting these down to adhere to whatever the rules are on this game.
Uh-huh.
And those are the rules. So that part's always in flux. And then the goal, what will make somebody win the game, is also in flux. And you'll get different color cards for that. So one goal is called the doctor. So you have to have the doctor card and the time travel card face up in order to win the game. But the goals of the game change every go because they're constantly always in flux.
So it's really a chance game that you are able to achieve the goal to win the game,
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm.
Because those things are constantly moving.
Yeah. Now, granted, you will get other cards, keeper cards, like, you know, if they're people or objects, things that you might need for the game.
Yeah.
But there are other cards, surprise cards, which can be used at any time during play. So say someone has the other half of whatever you need to win with the current goal on the board. Some certain surprise cards will allow you to steal other people's keeper cards for you to win. Some might suggest that you only need one type of card to win. So in the game that I was playing fairly recently. And some of these games can go as quick as 5 minutes, and sometimes they can take up to 30, which is genius if you can keep the game going that long. And this girl who was sitting next to me completely blew the game because we all saw her put down a heart as a keeper card, and it was the love card. but she had the goal card, and we were doing the, you know, play two. So she played her love card and then played her goal card, which was all you need is love. And if you have love on the board, you win. So you're aiming to put a goal up that you can
achieve
before somebody fucks your Christmas. So you're constantly in flux. Rules are constantly changing. You're like, what's going on? It's so much fun. And boom, flux, just done. There's nothing else you can do but just go with the flux.
I'm not going with the flux.
It's so much fun. It hurts your brain, though.
No.
It hurts your brain. And there are obviously different, there are different types. Like, there's a star flux, which is all sci-fi based, mm-hmm. where certain cards will actually have even more elements to them. But that game was really interesting. And, I mean, it might be a while before I play it again. But that was one of my first big adventures in tabletop gaming this week. I did get to play Cards Against Humanity, finally.
Mm.
And that is totally a game that we, the Sisters of Esh, need to tape ourselves playing.
Really? You think?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like somebody in the land of Esh has been trying to get a Cards Against Humanity game going anytime too soon.
I know, but now I know how to play, and it's going to be so much fun when we do. So if you don't know what Cards Against Humanity is, but you know what Apples to Apples is, then you essentially know what Cards Against Humanity is. Except it's a little darker.
A little?
It's a lot darker.
Yeah, and I've only been trying to get you to play with me for like a month.
Only a month? But you can play
with other people.
It was at a party, Ninja. You were not at the party.
It's because I wasn't invited.
You wouldn't have gone. Anyway. So... The great concept of Cards Against Humanity is that you can have a lot of people playing this game. And you really can just get a massive table, get 8, 10, 12 people. And there's a white deck and there's a black deck. And I'm not trying to be racist. That's just how the game is played.
Yep.
And the black cards will have a statement with one or two blanks in it. So it's a fill-in-a-blank game.
It's like a Mad Lib.
It's like a Mad Lib
It's game. A dark Mad Lib.
It's a dark, twisted, sadistic game.
Not necessarily sadistic.
Oh, yes it is, depending on...
If you get the right people together.
It depends on who you bring in. And you will get dealt 10 white cards that will have a name of a person or a thing or a statement of some kind on it. Correct. And your goal is to pick a black card. So whoever's got the black card to read the first black card does not get to put their cards in because they are now acting as the reader and the judge. And they'll read the black card. And say it's got two blanks on it. The reader then has to establish in what order they'll read your cards, like top to bottom or bottom to top. And you choose the funniest that you can come up with, which, you know, when you're drinking can be even more funny than when you're not drinking with yes, this game.
If you're of age to
drink. If you are, yes. Or you could just drink soda and get hyper.
True.
You know, sugar does it. Red Bulls. You can find ways to get, you know...
Sugar.
You can find ways. But regardless, the object of the game is to be able to collect. I think if you get a higher group of people, it's 5 black cards to win. I've heard some people who have had smaller groups, it's gone up to 10.
Yep.
So, and that's your goal. And the reader will choose who has the best answer, and that person gets awarded the black card. And that is just a great way to spend time if you're, trying to survive a hurricane named Sandy.
Yeah, but instead people play Monopoly.
So, I mean, you can go back to your standard games too. But those were really the big games that I really loved being exposed to this week. You can find them in just about any Target or Walmart or convenience?
No.
Department?
No. There's only one way you can get cards against... Well, there's two ways you can get Cards Against Humanity because it is not for sale in any retail location.
That's not true. I saw it in Target.
You couldn't have seen it in Target because Cards Against Humanity is a Kickstarter project. And so you can get it online. You can buy pre-made decks at Amazon. You can make your own deck by downloading the PDFs.
I saw it at Target.
I'm telling you, because of the Kickstarter, and they're made by hand when they're ordered, I'd be happy to jump into the car and go with you to the Target that you saw it at, because it shouldn't have been there.
Well, it was.
Because they're not yet being mass-produced for retail purchase. which is why I got my deck directly from the Cards Against Humanity website, which took 10 days to get because they were making them. Because you can make your own. You can go to the, you can do a search for Cards for Humanity. You can download the PDF. You can print your own. You can make your own. You can add your own sayings. They have some add-on decks that you can purchase online as well that add additional white and black cards to your deck. There's two, I think, versions of Cards Against Humanity right now. If you saw it in Target, then somebody else has licensed it to sell it in Target, because the original group who did the Kickstarter have not signed any deals to mass produce the decks to sell. So somebody else may have licensed it.
Okay.
Since it was a Kickstarter. Which is, you know, still cool. But, yeah, I have version one. I have not bought any of the update decks yet. For Cards Against Humanity, because I can't seem to get enough people interested to play it, to come over to play it, but I have it right underneath the Left, Right, Center, and the Apples to Apples, which I believe I bought on your recommendation and we never played.
They're both really good. And we've played Left, Right, Center.
Not with my Left, Right, Center.
No, but we've played Left, Right, Center.
Uh-huh, and Apples to Apples we didn't play. And we didn't play Cards Against Humanity. So they sit on my desk, right next to my Kevin Smith book. And one day, they shall be used.
Yep.
They shall be
But that's used. That's what I've been doing. I've just been spending a lot of time in tabletop land. And enjoying it, by the way. What about you? What have you done on the game tip?
Well, I've been playing Assassin's Creed, pretty much any waking moment where I'm not doing my day job. I am attempting to kill a shit ton of British and unlock the truth. I am only 22% complete in the game as far as my progress goes. I'm having a lot of difficulty actually completing memory sequences with full sync. But I am on sequence 9.
You just finished 8.
Finished sequence 8. So Connor, who's the lead protagonist, as far as Desmond's ancestor goes in this outing from Assassins, I gotta say, it's pretty badass. Like, I have spent a ton of time, doing side missions in the game, which is part of the reason why I haven't completed, a lot. There are still a lot of viewpoints to, synchronize. There are feathers to find. There aren't codex pages, but there are almanac pages that go floating through the wind that you have to chase, and you only have a limited window in which you can catch them before they disappear, and then you have to leave the area and come back for them to regenerate to try and trace them again, which is an interesting way to go about the quote-unquote almanac codex pages instead of having to, you know, fight your way into a special room and open a chest to get them. There are treasure chests that are hidden all around the towns, and you can still buy maps that will make them all appear on your map HUD so you can find them. Some you'll be able to just directly open. Other ones you'll have to pick the lock, and picking the lock can sometimes be difficult, especially when you have to hold the analog sticks in opposite directions while mashing the trigger, the right trigger, because if your fingers slip while you're mashing the right trigger, then it resets and you have to realign the analog sticks and start mashing again. I have run into just a couple of frustrating instances where I've died in the middle of a pursuit or a chase leaves me a little bit vulnerable to not be able to catch my target or track down my target in order to move on in the game. And it's happened to me twice now in a couple of missions. So that's been frustrating. But the hunting element is really interesting. I still haven't fought any bears, but I have killed and skinned wolves, cougars, elk, deer, rabbits, raccoons, foxes. I think that's about it.
That's a lot of things to skin.
Yeah. Well, and that's how you make money outside of the missions that you do. You have to trap and hunt things, skin them for their valuables, whether it be their pelt or their meat or their
pelt teeth. Pelt and meat.
So that way you can sell them. to different stores in order to make money so that
you just can made me hungry.
Buy consumables, meaning rope darts or snares or bait to help you hunt other animals.
For more pelts.
Or weapons.
You gotta get yourself a bear pelt.
So there's a lot of different things that you have to do. There's also building up your homestead, so getting more people to create homes on your homestead that add new skills can basically farm your land or mine it or refine it to create goods that you can then sell in order to build up your homestead. There are harbor master missions, and the game is really, really deep. To be honest with you,
it's so deep.
We've gone back after we finished the main story in the Assassin's Creed games to try and complete things.
I have completed them.
It'll take some time. It'll take some time for any completionist to get through story mode and complete all the pieces.
Challenge accepted. I did it once. I can do it again.
Yeah. But there are other games now coming out, too, as well, around that. So I wish you luck, Panda, on that, because I'm saying it right now, and you can say you're a puss or whatever.
I'm a puss?
I don't know if I'm going to complete Assassin's
you won't. Creed
before the year is out.
You won't.
I completed the other one, but I had to go back to it a couple of times.
I know.
And this is much, much deeper. I'm not even talking about just the outfits.
Deeper and deeper the further you go.
The weapons, the delivery missions, the escort missions, the liberation missions. I take my hat off to the UB team because they've really, as far as the final games go, really threw it down and not only created a story that I really want to know the end of. I really have emotionally connected to Connor and want to complete his story. And I'm curious as to, with so many sides putting blame on the other for being the downfall for the other, I'm really kind of curious to see how this all works out.
Yes.
We haven't had any quests for pieces of truth so much as you bounce in and out of sequences, you interact with Juno, not Minerva, who shares a piece of truth with you. So it's not necessarily a puzzle solver.
So see, you won't even need me.
Section of itself, you just have to get to those sequences. The missions so far with Desmond Real World are a little just jarring, just in that there's no HUD. At least so far, for me. No HUD when you're working as Desmond, so you don't know what your health is, you don't know what your key objective is. They really push you to rely on the skills that you have built as an assassin, so relying on your eagle vision and being observant in the environment as to where the yellow is, so that's still the key go in this direction indicator, whether it's a yellow power line or a character being highlighted in eagle vision will vary, but it's still your key destination piece. But you don't get that overview look when you're blending in with people as to whether or not you're hidden. So you kind of have to guess at it. And I've guessed wrong quite a few times.
Whoopsies.
So it's taken a little bit to kind of get my bearings between when I'm acting as Connor and when I'm acting as Desmond. But visually, it's still a ridiculously stunning game. The sequences when you are tracking your prey in the wood really feel realistic. Not that I know what it's like to hunt game from a tree, but the way that Connor, no one's gonna be like, hey, is he a ninja up in the tree? Say hey!
Hey!
Yeah, you're not gonna see that. But the way that Connor moves from tree to tree feels effortless and visually looks correct. I don't know that you'd be very successful leaping from a very tall tree onto an elk and be able to kill it in one shot because you didn't overshoot it from jumping from the tree. But Connor seems to have no problem tree jumping and killing shit. So that works for me. I will say that there are still some camera issues in the game. Just when going from building to building, when you're free running, there are times where you'll point corner and run direction, and God bless his little heart, he's just not gonna go there. No, he's gonna jump into that pile of hay that you're nowhere near. And when he pops back out, he's gonna be dressed in assassin white, whether you put him in assassin white or not. It's just some weirdness. Roll with it.
Sounds like a bug.
Kinda, sorta is a bug. But I am gonna finish the story on this one. And like I said, I'm gonna continue every open waking minute that I have devoted to this game to finish the story, because I want to know the story. I want to know what's going on with Washington and the Templars and the Assassins, and exactly why does the fate of man rest on Desmond Miles. I just need to know. Like, what is it about Desmond Miles? Not just that he's from an assassin line, because there are lots of assassins, but what is it about
Assassins?
Yeah, I said
assassins. Oh my god, assassins.
All right, I've been drinking.
Assassins.
And oh my god, assassins. But,
you're silly.
I am silly, but I'm gonna finish this game, damn it. And then when I finish it, I'm going back and I'm finishing Borderlands, because I haven't finished Borderlands 2, and I need to do it because, as we've said, the broke bitch time, 'tis nearly upon us.
It is upon us.
It's a pox upon my house. Okay.
It's a plague on both of our houses, which is the same house. It's a plague
on both our houses, which is one house. So it's a plague upon our house.
Sizz.
But, you know, Black Ops 2, I'm not a Halo player, but, you know, most of my friends
Halo
are.
4.
And so my Facebook feed just been like, oh my god, Halos. And I'm like, yeah.
I can see your Halo 4.
Black Ops 2, woohoo!
Yippee.
Yay!
It's got zombies.
I'm gonna put bullets and stuff, because I like putting bullets and stuff.
Bullet in your face.
But I've been playing Assassins a bunch. I've also been playing Dance Central 3 a bunch, picking up a couple of routines here and there. I still haven't moved into medium on most stuff yet, but that's going to be around
the
corner.
Did you get that beautiful chunk of downloadable content that came out last week?
I did, in fact, get the Gangnam Style. Open Gangnam Style. So that routine is going to
be sexy latte
popping off real soon. I've also been looking at a couple of things on the mobile side of the world, and as we're gearing up for the Wii U launch, thinking about what titles I actually want to get for my Wii U, because I just pre-ordered the system. I hadn't pre-ordered any games, just because I wasn't sure really what games I was going to want to play right off the bat from the Wii U. You know, I was thinking about everything that I saw at E3 launch and looking at the launch titles that were available, you know, Assassins being one of them. I don't see me going through all of this again on the Wii U, even though there are some additional gameplay things because of the controller that look like they'd be interesting, like some of the lockpicking things. I don't see that happening, so I sat down, I went, okay, really, it's a Nintendo system. So, as far as the launch title, I've got to go with the new Super Mario game.
And don't forget Pikmin.
Well, Pikmin is coming, but I don't think Pikmin's a launch title.
No, but that's something that you could look forward to getting for your Wii U.
Well, that's a given. I'm just talking about launch. You know, like, what do I want to play day one when I have the Wii U in my hand? Because there are a bunch of titles that are launch. You know, Assassins is launch, Zombie U is launch, the new Super Mario game is a launch title. And as I was looking at the entire list, and there's like 9 games total that are launch titles, some of which are just ports of games that are available now, I just wasn't convinced that there was anything right off the bat other than the Super Mario game for me as a player that was a must-have day one, I gotta try this. You know, I'm not big into zombie shooters. Although Zombie U looks to be an amazing survival game.
I wish I could play it.
You're really excited about it, Panda.
I was really excited about it I thought there's a good chance I was going to get a Wii U, but that might have to wait.
But I don't mind sharing, so you know, if you want to get it and just play it on mine.
No, that's okay.
All right, fine. Don't get it then and I be won't. Sad and
it's okay.
Miserable. But don't I won't be sad miserable. Miserable on the podcast because I would, like, they'd be really not happy.
Okay.
Okay. So, but for me, after going through everything and the killer would be Zelda. Like, if there was a Zelda game that was available at launch, it'd be a no-brainer. That would have been the game that I pre-ordered. But going through everything that was there and remembering kind of my gamer roots, it just was, it seemed like a no-brainer to me that the Mario game had to be the first game for me to play. And so I have ordered the new Super Mario game. And I'm looking forward to really getting hands-on with the Wii U controller. I didn't get a chance this past E3.
I got to touch it.
Because the Nintendo booth was just really, really crazy. And my appointment schedule just did not give me the 2 hours that it would take to get in, to get hands-on with it. So I have not been hands-on with the Wii U. And I won't be until I have mine in my hands. But for me, I just am looking forward to a new gaming experience. And seeing as how we're so far away from new consoles from Sony and Microsoft, and frankly, with all of the I don't want to say refurbing, because that's not really the right term, but I guess refresh is a better term. Sony seems to be refreshing the PS3 line a lot more than talking about or seeming to improve upon or develop a better system than the PS3. You know, we've now had 2 refreshes to slim down the existing PS3. That, to me, says if you're spending time to resize existing hardware, you're not spending that time improving it.
Well, no, because you're just making it smaller.
And so if that's the case, then my brain says logically, you're not looking to improve that technology anytime too soon. And so Nintendo may have a 1 or 2 year lead on both Sony and Microsoft with a new next-gen-ish console.
Perhaps.
Now, even though there are a lot of people that say that the Wii U is just catching up to what the Xbox and the PS3 can do as far as video resolution, memory, storage, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't really agree with that. I think that the Wii U controller, the media controller, is definitely a next-gen advantage and a next-gen production piece, not just a souped-up Move controller. So I do consider the Wii U to be a next-gen console, even though it's not pushing any better graphics necessarily than the existing console.
I think it's a snake in the grass. Like, I think Microsoft and Sony don't find this Wii U a threat yet, and they're coming off like, oh, it might just be a, you know, a little garden snake. It's not gonna pose any threat, and then it's gonna strike. And then they're going to go, fuck. We should have been paying more attention to that.
Well, I think that's definitely a possibility. I think that the system is going to be a sleeper hit. Just because there are a lot of people that are subscribing to the, oh, it's just a little bit better Wii, and I already have a Wii, so I'm good. I don't think that that's a fair estimate on what the Wii U is. So as we look to November 18th, which is a Sunday. And I've already taken that Monday off so I can get my Wii U on. Make sure that you find me online and share your thoughts if you picked up one. Or if you're waiting to pick up one, I definitely want to hear why. So just smack us on the Facebook, facebook.com/Landavesh, and share your thoughts about that. I'm looking forward really to getting my hands on the system. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and ultimately, that's what I want out of any gaming experience. I just want to have a good time. I want to have fun, and whether that fun is me going and jumping from roofs and, you know, putting a hidden blade through your skull, or jumping on a rabbit so I can get its lucky rabbit's foot and sell them for $4 a pop in town so I can buy a shiny bubble. You know, that's good time. And then finally on the gadget scene, because I would be remiss if I didn't show some love for Apple, because I own stock in the company and I love what they do. I am a fangirl, but I think for very good reason. I got my grubby little ninja paws on an iPad mini. For you, those of you who follow me on Facebook, you probably saw my status message that I said that I was posting from my new little device. And I actually went back and forth for a while on whether or not I was going to get an iPhone 5 or an iPad mini. And one, because I liked both devices. They're just cool in my book. I enjoy my iPhone 4S. I have an iPad, which I use like crazy, both for fun and for work, especially when it comes to taking notes in meetings and doing presentations on the fly. It's just a great little device to have with me instead of carting around my 15-inch laptop to do the same things. So most of my devices have very specific uses in my life, which is why I have them, and not just because I want to have them, although I do have those kinds of devices too, like my Numark iDJ Pro, because I one day want to be a DJ. But I got to tell you, within the first 5 minutes of opening my iPad mini, I was patting myself on the back for making the right decision, because I really thought long and hard, which I normally don't do when it comes to Apple devices. I just run down to the store and like, here, take my money. I would like the thingy, please. Thank you very much. No, I don't need it gift wrapped.
It's a gift for me.
I don't need to write myself a note. But this one I really agonized over, and with some prodding from my husband, actually created a pro and con list, which I've never done, by the way, when it comes to buying an Apple device, on whether or not an iPhone
5. So you were very con list before you and your husband decided to be pro listers?
You were con lister? I wasn't a con lister and I wasn't pro lister. I was Swiss. I was neutral.
But now you, how are you feeling now?
For this particular outing, the list was really surprising, because as I started running down the pros of getting an iPad mini versus the cons of getting an iPad mini and what I could use it for and what I already do on the device that I have and what differentiator between the device that I have and the device that I wanted was, and then doing the same thing with the iPhone 5, I really got to a point where the iPhone 5 didn't have enough pros for me to justify getting it. You know, the panorama feature is fantastic. I think it's really cool, but I already have a panorama app on my iPhone 4S, which works just fine and builds just as nice a panorama photo. It's just not a panorama application created by Apple. The faster processor is nice, but when it comes to my phone, I typically am doing emails, calendar, and Facebook. And I don't need a boom fatty processor to do those things on my phone. Especially now that Facebook has a app that's a native app for iOS, meaning it was written for iOS and it's not just a port of their mobile web experience. It works just fine. I don't have apps quitting on me like they used to. And so when I started going down the list, you know, the camera that I have on my iPhone works great. For the amount that I use the camera feature, I don't really need the little bit of oomph that you get with the camera that's on the iPhone 5. The Lightning connector is nice, but I typically sync everything through the cloud. I don't carry my iTunes library on my phone anymore. If there are items that I want, like a movie or a song, I'll just download it from the cloud because I have iTunes Match. So I don't need a faster connection for transferring data to my computer, because I don't transfer data to my computer. And I don't transfer data from my computer. I do everything through the cloud on my iPhone. So the faster connector not really that big of a bonus for me. Then when you finalize that off with, you know, having the headphone jack on the bottom versus the top, well, I don't work out with my iPhone. I work out with my Shuffle, which I keep on my wristwatch. So I don't need the jack to be on the bottom. And I use my Beats headphones, which have an L connector, so I'm never running into a problem anymore of knocking out my headphone when I'm running on the treadmill. So as I started going through really deeply my list, I realized that I was talking myself out of an iPhone 5. And that was the first list that I had made. And when I compared the iPhone 5 to my existing 4S and what I do on the phone and what I need, my 4S fits the bill. I mean, I haven't even filled my 4S because, again, I'm not transferring hard data all the time to my phone. It's just the apps, whatever things are being stored by the apps and my photos, which I always take that content off my phone before we go out to a show so I can have all of the open space available to take new photos and new videos. I just haven't run it out of space yet. So after I talked myself out of the iPhone 5, I thought, oh, well, here we go. I'm about to talk myself out of an iPad mini too. As I started that list, I realized that I take my iPad with me everywhere. I do a lot of note-taking on my iPad. I check my social networks on that, which my day job, that's a big piece of what I do because I'm a social media strategist, specialist, manager, pick it, I don't care. I spend a lot of time on a bunch of different social networks, and so to have at my fingertips the ability to very quickly check, search, seek out, or answer content coming in on social is really important. And so a lot of times going into meetings, going off-site, the device that I take with me is the iPad. It's not my laptop. My MacBook Air that I have is strictly just for the ESH stuff that I do, so it travels with me when I'm writing. And as such, I keep it a very light system. I don't sync any of my mobile devices to that computer. My production machine is a 15-inch MacBook Pro, which, you know, only travels when I'm going to have to do some serious video, either in Final Cut or audio in Logic or in GarageBand. And so when I started my list with what I do with my iPad, I realized that I really was of two minds with my iPad. And it was part of the reason why I was getting frustrated, because I have some work things on it and a lot of personal things on it, and the two worlds don't really meld together, and so I'm constantly having to go, okay, I have to remember that this account is over here, but this account I can only access on my phone because I don't want it on my iPad because my iPad's supposed to be my personal stuff, but I do sometimes have to take notes, and so I have that on my iPad, and I realized as I was going through my list that I had two separate needs when it comes to a personal mobile device. I had the personal ninja stuff, which is my video streaming and my cloud access to content and my podcasting apps and my WordPress app to update our site and the photo manipulating apps for when we're on site doing events and shows. And then I had my personal media device needs as day job ninja, which a little bit overlap with what my personal needs were, but I needed to keep those accounts separate. And so as I started going down the list of what I needed and what I was doing and what I wasn't doing, and I came across that the hiccup to all of it was because I didn't have a device that was solely for work or solely for play, I had this mishmash hodgepodge that wasn't really accomplishing anything that I wanted. And I realized, oh my gosh, I could solve this if I just had a iPad for play for Ninja and an iPad for work, because I could separate out the social accounts, I could separate out the email accounts, I could separate out the calendars, I could separate out the media needs, I could separate out so much and keep things straight, and then I could have all of my social accounts in my Tweetbot on my personal iPad, and all of my social accounts in my Tweetbot and in my Facebook app for the things that I manage on the iPad mini, or vice versa, just depending upon how I wanted to do it. I could keep my notes application separate from my writing application. I could keep the podcasting things that I do for ESH, separate from the video stuff that I do for my day job. I could keep the calendar separate so I wouldn't have 16 items every single day on a calendar because I had so many meetings or articles done and I could easily separate them out. And I realized that I didn't have a one device rules them all situation anymore. I really needed two devices. And so then I started looking and at, you know, whether or not I needed two full-size iPads or if I could just do an iPad mini and my regular iPad. And when I started comparing the iPad mini to the new iPad, I didn't need a Retina display because what I'm doing is not high definition enough, whether we're talking about the stuff that I do for ESH or for my job. And I just started going down the list and realized, dude, I could totally do all the work stuff very easily on an iPad mini and keep my current iPad as just the ninja stuff and roll with it. And so I ended up realizing that I didn't need an iPhone 5. I'm going to wait for the next phone. So as much as it surprised me, I didn't get an iPhone 5. I got a 64 gig iPad mini. I decided to go with the black, and I typically go with white devices. Just because more times than not, when I pick up a device, I am intending to use it for ESH stuff. So when I skin it, it's just easier if the device is white because it goes really nicely with our look and feel. But I decided since this one was for work and I really like the classy look of the black aluminium, as Johnny Ive says, I went with the black device. And I've been playing with it now for about 24 hours and getting it set up with stuff and testing things out. And, you know, it's a smaller iPad, but boy, it's snappy and it's already solved a couple of problems for me. So I'm really, really happy with the device. And the price point was right. I basically paid $50 less for that iPad than I would have if I picked up an iPhone 5 because I was outside of the window for getting a discount because my 2 years with AT&T aren't up yet. So it's really worked out for me. If you don't have a mobile device yet and you're thinking about getting one for reading books, for watching movies, for just messing around on social, checking emails, maybe doing some banking, I highly recommend that you do some comparison shopping and take a look at the different feature sets that are available on the common popular tablets that are out there. The Kindle Fire is really popular, especially if you already have a Kindle account. That you've got books settled into, although you can use many of those same books and access them through the Kindle app on your iPad. But between the Kindle Fire and looking at the Galaxy S tablet and the iPad mini, I just ended up with the stuff that I've been doing the majority of my life, my apps, the things that I rely on, they're all through the iStore, and I don't really want to start over in any other device and have to repurchase or re-download or get new items. So I will probably have a more in-depth thing about the iPad mini once I've actually set up all of my accounts in it and have had some time to put it through its paces. But I have yet to charge the device since I've got it, and I've been trying to use it like crazy, and I'm just now at 60% battery. So it definitely seems to live up to the almost 10 hours of battery life promised, and that's with Wi-Fi on. So I gotta say, pretty freaking stoked about it.
I can tell. How do you really feel?
You know, I mean, it's okay. I smile every time I open it.
I know you do.
You know, and if you can't have fun with a device that you've picked up, why get it?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, why play a game if you're not having fun?
Right.
Why watch an anime if you don't get any joy out of it?
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy my iPad. I enjoy my iPad mini. I named it Hadouken.
It's downright fierce?
Because it's downright fierce. There. I said it. So, you got a little anime out of me, you got a little video game out of me, and you got some gadget out of me. You got tabletop out of Panda. I'm going to say this is a pretty packed podcast.
I would agree.
I'm trying to think. Did we leave anything out?
No.
Oh, yeah, we did. Because there's one thing we didn't talk about.
What?
Movie.
Well, only one of us has something to talk about for a movie.
Mmm. I saw Wreck-It Ralph this weekend. And we don't typically talk about movies on our podcast, but seeing as how Wreck-It Ralph is actually based around video games, it kind of fits with what we do.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm not going to spoil it because Panda hasn't seen it, and I'm going to take her ass to see it because she needs to see it because she'll love it. But what I will say about Wreck-It Ralph is it has just the right amount of nods to and homages to retro gaming and current games. Okay, the team definitely did their homework. They spent some time talking with a bunch of different companies. The fact that they got the rights to display so many characters, you know, Q-Bert. There's even a reference to Tapper in the movie, which is fantastic. It's a really enjoyable flick, and it's one that both parents and kids will have enough pieces in there to enjoy. But the story is very sweet. The plot is really interesting. The twist that popped up, I didn't actually see it coming, which was very cute. And it's just a really enjoyable movie. So if you're looking for something this holiday season coming up that you can gather your friends or your family together and watch and know that everybody in your group is going to enjoy it. Older people will enjoy it because of the kind of life lessons about relationships with people and figuring out who you are that are in the story. They'll relate to. Your kids will just enjoy it because there are all kinds of fun little jokes in there and a little bit of potty humor, which, you know, always wins with everyone. But then there's enough in there for the hipsters that no one walks away from this movie with a feeling of meh. So highly recommend it. I am probably going to see this movie at least 3 more times in the theater and then immediately buy it as soon as it becomes available digitally or on DVD, whichever one I can get my hands on first. So clap, clap, clap to Disney on that.
And are we even going to talk about the fact that Disney bought LucasArts?
I was getting there. See, you start with the movie thing that's done by Disney, and then you loop it into the, holy shit, Disney owns Star Wars and Indiana Jones.
Yep.
Because Disney, $4 billion. That's all it takes. $4 billion.
That he's donating straight to charity. He's not even pocketing that money.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. George Lucas has made all the money that a man could possibly, in what he has left of a lifetime, consider spending. And that's if he just blew it all away, which he's not going to do. So I applaud George Lucas for that. But
he's going to go spend time with his black girlfriend now. Bye.
His lady.
His chocolate lady.
Oh, dude.
See? He's on to something, guys.
Seriously. I'm just saying.
Chocolate ladies.
Chocolate ladies. No, but the deal with Disney, in case you haven't seen or heard it on the news, Disney has purchased Lucasfilm for $4 billion. And actually, it's LucasArts, so they got everything. They got ILM. They got Lucasfilm. They've already announced that they will be releasing
Episode 7 in
2015. So we are, you know, just shy of 3 years away from the next Star Wars film. They also own Indiana Jones. So, here's hoping maybe...
Here's to you, kid.
A better than Crystal Skull indie movie to go out on? No Shia LaBeouf? Maybe? No Boof? Huh? Maybe?
He wasn't even the worst thing about that movie.
Dude, I try to forget that movie and have a pleasant tomorrow. But that also means that all of the Star Wars cartoons that are out there are now going to have Disney behind them. When you think about the acquisitions that Disney and partnerships that Disney has been making over, you know, just the last 4 years, you know, they picked up Marvel.
Yeah. And you want to know what my thought is on that really quickly?
Yeah. Sure. I mean, Toe.
Well, for one, I think I'm not upset about the buy. I think it's very strategic for Disney to pick that up. Because, I mean, Disney, you know, World and Land already had the Star Wars ride and the Indiana Jones ride. So, I mean, it seemed like he already kind of had some of those things in place. Not to mention, if we ever get a Kingdom Hearts 3 game, we could now have a Star Wars world.
This is true.
And a Marvel world.
And we probably will.
And we're probably going to see... Well, I mean, I think it'd be funny if we saw some Stormtroopers in Once Upon a Time, because we already know that ABC is part of Disney.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You know, I saw a cartoon, and it really made me laugh, but it also made me think, where, you know, Darth Vader was standing on one side, was like, come to the dark side, and we will rule the universe. And on the other side, they had a bunch of Disney lawyers, who were like, no, come to Disney. And with us, we will rule the universe. And they showed all the different things that Disney owned and partnerships that they had. You know, when you think about the next Star Wars movie, many people groan, but when you take a step back and go, hold it. Disney is partnered with Pixar. If you can imagine some of the Pixar people getting involved with helping to helm the next Star Wars movie with the ILM crew behind it, you know, can you, or have you even thought of Star Wars and what would happen if Brad Bird was involved with the story?
Holy crap.
Okay, because Brad Bird is part of Pixar. Okay, John Lasseter has gone back to the animation division, but Brad Bird is still one of the key storytellers. You know, so start thinking about that. You know, that becomes a really powerful and interesting marriage. You know, when you start thinking of all the storytellers and the visual specialists that are now available between the merger of ILM, the Pixar Brain Trust, and the Disney Imagination teams. There's got to be some really creative things that are about to happen with a lot of treasured, revered franchises. So I'm really excited about it. I was nervous at first, but as I really started to think about it, and, you know, you look at the first few Marvel movies that came out, and then you look at Avengers, and you look at Iron Man 3, and, you know, now with the announcement of the next X-Men movie, you know, you start looking at all that stuff, and you go, okay, you're really starting to put some serious muscle when it comes to creative and storytellers behind it, that you gotta get a little excited. Now, yes, it could go wrong, for sure, but, man, I don't think so. I mean, we all had that groan when J.J. Abrams was put behind the Star Trek movie, and everyone was like, yeah, it's not going to be Kirk and Spock as you know them. And then we got the movie, and we were like, fuck William Shatner for, like, half a minute, because, oh, my God. I'm just saying. So, and then Zachary Quinto was gay. So, you breathe.
And you made me sad again. You had to bring that up.
Here, I'll make you happy again. You're going to have a Star Wars movie come out right after a Star Trek movie with Zachary Quinto and Chris Pine. So.
But he's gay.
But he's still going to be Spockalicious and all over Zoe Saldana.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to have Zachary Quinto.
Fantasies come true.
I'm just saying, imagine if you will. So I'm looking forward to it, actually. I'm
going to have a very logical time.
And I got to tell you, I really was not looking forward to anything new happening in the Star Wars universe, and now I am. So you add on the fact that even though half of the $4 billion is going to be cash and the other pieces in stock options, George Lucas has said that he is going to donate his piece of everything. So, you know, big chunk of El Cacho to education and philanthropy and community development. And, you know, that's a big thing. You know, we give Bill Gates a lot of credit for the Bill and Melinda Fund and the things that he is doing on the philanthropy side to really help the education system, and especially in areas that need it, like public schools, and specifically public schools in urban and suburban areas. And so to see that even making a deal this large, that George has already said that he is going to be donating a substantial amount of money to help better the future, just really reaffirms for me that, you know, he's a nerd's nerd. I forgive him for a crystal skull. So that's what I got for this week. If you want to know other things that are going on in our minds that we're thinking of, be sure to check them out on our website, www.egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. We will put news out first and foremost there on our page. Be sure to become a subscriber so that way you can find out the moment we put new articles up and check them out. And you can always find our stuff, like the podcast, on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. Or if you want to use a short address, you can do that, and it is
ESH.co, that is ESH.co. The shortest will bunch the long one. Check out any articles that are coming out.
Articles? What's a
carticle? Carticles.
Is that an article that you write from your car?
It's an article that wears a cardigan.
Oh.
Because it's getting chilly.
It is. Winter is coming.
But it will bounce to the long one. You can check out any articles that are written within the week. All questions and comments should go to our Facebook page. Facebook.com/landofesh. Come talk to me, please.
Penna likes to talk to
people. And I mean, we do this, you know, podcast thing.
Yeah, we do, which you can find either by searching the podcast application from iTunes on your iOS device, or looking for Electric Sisterhood in the iTunes Music Store or Microsoft Store by typing in Electric Sisterhood, all one word, and hitting the search button. And then as soon as we pop up, when you hit subscribe, that will ensure that brand new episodes of our podcast arrive for your ear pleasure as soon as we put it out on the internet. But if you're not into, you know, applications and subscribing or whatever, because you don't want to put a label on this thing that we have together, then you can
plug us into any RSS feeder or any podcast search engine. But if you're looking for us, we've got some friends you should listen to, too.
That's right, because we're not the only thing that makes up the Land of Esh. No, 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 no. While we put out brand new episodes of our podcast, Poppin' Fresh, on Mondays, you can follow it up on Tuesdays with a brand new episode of the Boston Bash Brigade podcast, which is held down by one of our homeboys, King Baby Duck. They are the testosterone to our estrogen, so if you want more of a guy's, you know, approach to
man's world, man's world, we grunt all the time, it's excellent. That should be the theme song.
I just did them a favor. You can check those out on Tuesday. Follow that up when you're looking for gadgets and gizmos and all that stuff.
Thank you.
With a brand new episode of the Geek Aggro podcast and website hosted by our homeboy, Deuces Wild. And for the rest of your nerd needs, there's all the stuff that we write about on all of our respective websites, which you can find, like I said, respectively, collectively, at egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. We are on the socials, so you can hit us up on our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter. If you want to know, as soon as we put an article out, you want to follow at ESH News, all one word. If you want to follow all the individuals who make up the Land of Esh, just check out my page, twitter.com/ninjasista, and review the Land of Esh list. Everyone who has contributed to magazine episodes, our podcast, our website, you'll find them on that list. I guarantee you follow those people, you will have a nerdy good week. Guaranteed. So with that, I'm going to say Panda.
Yep.
What shit you digging this week?
I am digging The Little Mermaid on DVD.
The collector's edition, the special edition, the back from the vault for a limited time only edition?
Just whatever edition I watched over my friend's house the other day. Because I got to watch it and I got my jitters out. My Disney jitters out.
You got your Disney jitters out?
Yep.
You feel better now?
Yep.
Is it like a shot?
To the heart!
Okay, alright, enough of that. Enough of that. Enough.
What shit are you digging this week?
TFury.com.
Oh, I bet you are.
Yeah.
Most of your shirts come from there.
A lot of my geeky shirts come from T-Fury, and I got a new one this week. I subscribed to their page on Facebook. If you haven't been to tfury.com and you're looking for nerdy shirts that aren't going to break the bank, they put out a specialty shirt every single day. $10. Nice stuff. I recently procured an Ermengarde Kirky shirt, and I will post photos as soon as it comes in. I love T-Fury. So as always, I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we're out till next week, guys.
Bye.
Toodles.